Test 1, 2. Okay. Alright.
I hereby give to the Buffalo Women's Oral History Project the tapes recorded on March 30th, 1982. For such educational and scholarly uses and purposes, the directors, Elizabeth Kennedy and Madeline Davis, shall determine. I further consent to the transcription and publications of any or all of this interview, as educational and scholarly work require. I have been assured that only my first name, Andy, will be employed in any use of these tapes. I understand that at some future date, the tapes will be housed in an archive chosen by the directors of the Buffalo Women's Oral History Project and will be available for public access, governed by the rules of the archive. I give consent that these tapes be made available for research purposes immediately after the date of the last interview.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. We've talked about thinking, trying to think historically, and maybe the first question I should ask you for the tape is, knowing that we're writing a book about the history of the lesbian community in Buffalo, what do you think is the most important thing for people to know, or one of the most important things that we make sure we don't leave out about gay life in Buffalo? I'm going to get a Kleenex while you're thinking about it. I know it's hard, there's a lot of stuff.
Well, it's not just the gay life in Buffalo, I'd say it's gay life all over. Let's finally recognize that we're equal. We're equal. Not just the women's lib, but gay lib. We're equal and accepted now. I mean, we have a say-so now.
You really feel that?
Yes.
That so much has changed?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I can walk into any restaurant now, or any bar, or any church, or any school. And I don't have to hide. I don't feel ashamed. And I might get a little embarrassed now and then in bathrooms. But it's a part of the course. It's changed a lot, I mean, from what it was.
So you must see life in the old days then as having really been very hard.
Very, very hard. It was like a night and day, Jekyll and Hyde, that's just what it was. It was like you led two lives. You had to use a facade to work. It wasn't really you, but you had to make a living. And if your happiness wasn't with a woman naturally, it had to be hidden. You couldn't be yourself. And it just made you feel... relationships didn't last long then because there was so much against you that if one felt like, well, I don't care if people know, maybe your partner did, maybe there was a family situation or a job situation, public situation. They couldn't be seen with you and just couldn't. You had to sneak and hide pretty soon. You thought, well, what the hell? I want to be me. And so things didn't last too long in those days. They didn't last. The only ones that did last were the ones that didn't look gay at all. And there are still those today. But I mean, that's just the way it happens. I look gay, but not because I'm dressing this really to play a role. It's just, if I wasn't gay, I'd be dressed like it. It's the only way I know. It's the way I was raised. I've always been this way. But now when it's so accepted, I have the right to choose and go where I want, with whom I want, if they choose to be with me, and I don't expect I have to take any ridicule for it.
So in the old days, the relationships you think that lasted were women that didn't look gay.
Right.
Huh.
And, I mean the majority, now I'm not saying 100%, but I'd say out of 100%, I'd say 90.
Yeah.
Because sooner or later, somebody would find out, or someone had seen it. Oh my God, we can't be seen together anymore. What's this? Oh, my boss saw me. I'm going to lose my job now. Oh, we can't go in that restaurant. My brother goes there. I can't bring you home. You look funny.
I see. So it was the butches or women who looked butch.
They were the ones that had the... I would definitely say. Because they had to accept that. They had a... they wanted to be with a person, they wanted to prove that they are, you know, I'm gonna, whatever it is, take care of you. And then, geez, she's embarrassed to let me see her family know. She's embarrassed, she's ashamed of me to go in this bar. Well, I'm not, you know, but she is, I can't do this, I can't do that. I can't call her too often if someone's gonna see what's going on here. And
what
so pretty soon you say, oh, the hell with it. So you go find someone else, you be with them for a while, until they got nervous.
What's the time period that we're talking about when much of this happened?
Well, for me, because it started like I came out, I think 56, I think 55 or 56, I came out.
Yeah.
So I'd say from that time right through the 60s. Around the 70s, I'd say it changed. It started changing. Where you could walk down the street without being jeered at, spit on, beat up.
Were the women that complained, the femmes that you were with, I assume all the women you've been with you would refer to as femmes,
mm-hmm.
Did they really get hassled a lot for being with you?
Oh, yeah.
So it was not imaginary.
Oh, no. Their jobs were in jeopardy. Their family life was in jeopardy.
So they had to choose. It was
That's
either
right.
You or the job. You or the family.
And then, I mean, the job was important. It still is today. But they couldn't afford to give that up or lose it for that. It's like you're branded. Once you're... All that sticks with it.
Well, what about your getting jobs?
It wasn't easy. I turned down a lot of good jobs because I had to dress to go to work. Civil service jobs. I worked for $1.50 in the factory.
Yeah.
Because I could wear what I wanted, be what I wanted.
Did you work at the wax factory?
No, I missed that one.
You missed that. Everybody else worked at the wax factory.
Yeah, no, I missed that one. I worked at quite a few of them. That one I missed. That's what it was. I mean, I had damn good jobs. I mean, I had them. Oh, wow. I just couldn't conform to it. I said, I'd be uncomfortable. I don't want to do that. I want to be me. I want to do what I want to do.
How old were you when you first knew you liked girls? In a different way from
how
why other girls like girls.
I'd say around 8 or 9 years old.
So that's 1940s. Early 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know then that you were a different kind of girl? What I mean is, did you have an awareness of being butch then?
No. I was a tomboy. I guess we all go through the stage of tomboys, but I just never came out of it. You know, I stayed, you know. When I be playing with different girls that the boys picked on, I beat the boys up, you know, things like that. And when I really started having, like, I knew I was feeling different things when age related. Playmate. That would I be maybe 12. 11 or 12. And there was this one particular girl, a playmate that I had, and I was from the Adirondacks, so there you, it was really a weird place because they never seen colored people, much less queers, you know. I mean, it just was never heard of, you know, seen it, you know. And so I didn't even know I was what I was. All I knew was I liked this one girl. We used to play together all the time. And we'd play house, naturally. I was the father and she was the mother. And we kissed and hidden, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And she stayed, we stayed good friends. Well, I was 17. And then, of course, I knew that I was really... Well, let's see, I had to go back. I'd say into high school. I went to high school, and I went to a naturally girls' vocational.
Oh, you did?
Yes,
uh-huh.
My first class. And I had crushes there,
uh-huh.
And about 30 girls.
Yeah.
And all without their knowledge, of course. This was definitely a no-no. This was a horrible, horrible thing, like a leper. So when I graduated from high school, I decided I was going to join the service. I thought, well, I've heard so much that things like that go on there. Maybe I could find something there, you know. I really didn't know what to do or what you're supposed to do. I just knew I wanted. And so I went up to the Adirondacks to say goodbye to my childhood friend. And we kissed goodbye. I was 17. It's pretty well know what you're doing. That was all. There was never anything sexual. I don't know. It just never was. I wanted it, but you didn't know what the hell it was. You know, stuff was. You were filled with passion, but you didn't know how to go about this thing. You know. Or you weren't around anyone to... I don't know how to explain it. You just didn't really know. And so then I went in the service. And then
now
I...
Now, what year is that?
55. And there was not as much as they claim to be. There was a lot of gays there, but not as much as they claim there is. And I didn't actually see anything happen there. I didn't actually see an act. But you could tell the more masculine ones from the feminine ones, that was there. Like, I myself was a more masculine one. I mean, I really got into the service thing. I was a leader. That was good. And I didn't get involved there. I didn't. And I maybe see him at the WM Club or something like that and watch. But I didn't, because there, I mean, anything like that, out you go. There's another thing. There you are, hidden again. Serving your country, you have to go and throw your ass out. Dishonorable. My God, your whole life is fucked up then, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So... got out of there, and I met this Marine's wife while I was in there. Now I knew that something was going to happen. I just knew it. So when I got out, I went and looked her up, because she lived right off the base. And so she took off, left her husband, and her and I took off. Never had done anything now, mind you, but in love. And we started west. So,
this is still with no sex in your life.
Right. Nothing.
Amazing.
And we landed in Indiana. That's when we about ran out of money. Muncie, Indiana.
You'd been in the Marines how long?
Three years. Yeah.
1958, this is.
And so I went and got a job for a trucking company as a secretary, though. Naturally, I had to wear a skirt and detested it. Hated it. Because here's this girl I'm trying to impress. I want to be with her. She wants to be with me, and I felt like the worst freak in the world in the skirt, you know. And then it happened. And all I can say is not because anyone told us. We didn't read books, but we just went to bed and did whatever we felt we liked to enjoy. And I had sex.
Uh-huh.
So
how'd you know what to do?
Wherever I felt a surge of excitement, I got right to it.
Uh-huh.
And so then, in the meantime, I had this crush on this girl I was in high school with. I've been with him for 4 years, and we hung around together. We really close. And I think there was something there, but we never, either one of us would say anything. I think she was afraid, I was afraid, but I still had this crush for her.
This well, is now, the girl that you had kissed goodbye?
No, this is a different girl. That was the girl in the Adirondacks. This is a girl from high school.
And high school happened where? In Buffalo?
Yeah, girls location.
Buffalo, I see.
So I just wanted to put that in so when I get back here.
Okay.
So now I left the girl in Muncie, then she turned out to be with Menda. Why, this nearly killed me. I just didn't know what was the world, and it was horrible, it was terrible. So I got on the bus and I came back to Nashville, Buffalo. So when I got back here, of course I had been in touch and writing with this girl from high school. And of course when I'd be home, we'd be with each other. I mean, not sexually, but we spent a lot of time here. So I came home, and I immediately went downtown. I said, there's got to be better. Now I know that there's places.
Yeah.
So I went down and I was looking for them. And Pat's Cafe, I went there once while I was in high school. I used to stare at the queers,
uh-huh.
which later turned into be the Mardi Gras. That was the old Pat's Cafe. That's where all the gay guys on there. There was girls too, but not as many. So I went down there and introduced myself, really, got very assertive there, and got in with the gay crowd. I seen the ones that I knew that were butch, and I just got in there and I met another girl who had been in the Army, so we had something in common, and she said, would you have a girlfriend? And now, remember, this is my first trip into the gay bar.
And this is 1958?
Mm-hmm. In Buffalo. This
yeah.
Is, yeah. And I thought, gee, I don't want to sound like a square, you know, so I says, well, of course. And she said, well, bring her and come over to my apartment with her and her girl, and, you know, dinner and drinks. And I says, okay. So I went back to this friend of mine that I had this crush on through high school, who were still very good friends, and I said, you got to come with me to this place. I said, I have to tell you something. I said, I am homosexual. And she said, you are? Now she knew it all. I said, yes, I am. I said, and we were such good friends that anything that she could do to make me happy would be fine. And it's the same for me, for her. So I said, we'll go to this house. I said, you got to pretend that we're lovers. Oh, I said, okay. And I thought, now's my chance. So we got there and we're having a good time. And I said, yes, so close up holding her hand. I never did this. Holding her hand. With her, anyhow. And then pretty soon I got into a nice necking session. I was on top of the world. Everything is coming true for me. This girl that I'd loved for so long, now this is really it. This, I found my happiness. And we stayed together for quite a while, you know. Because we had been friends all through high school, her family naturally was used to seeing me. I mean, this is the way I was, because it was all through school. And my family never thought anything. Because I was just natural.
Yeah.
Just was nothing wrong with me. And well, then after her, it was about a year. I was with her about a year, and I seemed to have. I was really doing pretty well there. You know, I had a lot of girls like me. And this went to my head. I said, wow. You know. So I started running around with other ones because I couldn't get over it. Just ran. Wow. It was like, kid in the candy shop.
So you were 20, 21?
21.
Yeah.
And after that, we split up, and it was really this first love, first breakup, because I wanted to be with these other girls. You know. And then after that, it was go. You know. Now I'm settled down. 13 years with this one, but I have a little hanky-panky here and there, because we all do.
Sure. And right now you're in a non-monogamous.
Yes, I am right now. Yeah, I am right now. And now it's come right to the point now. This isn't like it's me or no one now. Now I have come right to this girl and told her I'm seeing this one, seeing that one. And it's fine. It's either accept it or forget it.
Yeah.
I still have respect and things. I don't do anything in front of me.
Uh-huh.
It's great. I could understand. Could never have done this years ago. No.
Oh, I know. I'm in the same situation.
Could never have done it.
It's,
yeah.
There are rough times.
Oh,
yeah. I've had some very rough times over.
Yes.
But it's easier now, but it would have been impossible back then.
Yeah, well, like, this isn't a too long that we even had this understanding. As you well know, you're my, I was with you New Year's, remember?
Right.
So,
yes.
It's only since then that she has said, all right, I accept what you're doing, I have to, or, you
right.
know.
Uh-huh.
We'll see.
Well, I hope it continues to work well.
Yeah, it's doing good, as long as you don't abuse anything.
Right.
That's really
And I hope that when the shoe is on the other foot, that you can take it as well as you can.
Well, I said I would, because we had this agreement. Because it just don't, you know, I would never, not that I have to tell her, but she wouldn't have to tell me, don't do anything in front of her, I wouldn't think of it. I wouldn't think of it.
So you went to your first bar at Buffalo
mm-hmm.
in around 1955 to stare at the queers.
Right. In fact, earlier than that, it was like in 52, 53.
That was
Pat's
Cafe.
Pat's Cafe.
Oh.
Which later became the Mardi Gras.
Was that the only bar you went to in 52?
Mm, yeah.
So you don't know any other ones that were going there?
No. Because I wasn't, the girls like I was running around with, this was very convenient for me. Their brother was gay.
Oh.
In fact, he's one of the old Hollywood Jones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yeah, I know.
Yeah, well,
years.
I used to run around with his sisters.
Oh,
jeez. Phyllis and Joyce, wasn't it?
Yeah, right, Joyce.
And they said, oh, come on, we'll go down to Hats, because we can get a buck off my brother, because we were out, we didn't even want
uh-huh.
So we go down there, I just was, wow. You know, but I couldn't let them know.
Because they weren't gay.
They didn't know that I was that
right.
way. And I didn't even know what the hell, I knew I was, but I wonder. And I said, this, I got to remember this place. That was Pat's Cafe. There was Blanche, remember Blanche?
A drag queen.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. Vaguely, God. I do remember Holly.
Really. I'm telling you, there was a lot of girls that had crushes on him because
yeah.
he was beautiful.
I'm kind of interested in a little bit earlier periods of that when you knew you liked girls and you were the daddy when you were playing house.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk about how people identify themselves as butch or femme. And we used to think that you'd have to be in a gay community to know that you were a butch. But we've recently met women who knew when they were 8, when they were 10,
mm-hmm.
that they were going to be, if they were going to be in a couple, that they were going to be the masculine one. They
mm-hmm.
were going to be the daddy
right.
in the relationship. Because how do you get that sense?
Butch, femme, whatever, that's just a monogram. It's just, but you got to call it something. No, really, this is how I feel. I mean, you could call me a door. I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm an aggressive sort of person with a woman.
I am too, but I'm a femme. So I'm aggressive in a very different way.
In a different way. Well, that's
real different.
Everyone's an individual, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone's an individual.
And I know that femme means something different to me now than it used to. I mean, God forbid I should touch my lovers in 1960.
Oh, death.
And
well,
now I wouldn't have a lover I couldn't touch.
Right.
You know?
Right. That's completely turned around. When I first come out, that was the same way. Why don't you dare put your hands on me when you were having sex?
Was that really true?
Yes. And I, to this day, but I mean, everyone's an individual.
Sure.
I don't. But there is no butch and femme today. I mean, all the younger crowd that I meet now, there's no butch and femme. They look at you like you're a jerk. You know, but really, sometimes you don't know who's who. And like and they don't care now. This group that's here now, the young ones. Now with us, how the hell explain it? We didn't cut our hair short because we wanted. I don't know. Maybe some did. I don't know. I'm just speaking to myself. I didn't want to be a man. I didn't want to be a man, but I wanted to be. Treated like one.
You wanted to have the kind of respect men got from women.
Right. I wanted to satisfy them, and I wanted. want to make love. I love to make love. I still would say it's the greatest thing in my life. But I don't want them to touch me. It spoils the whole thing. I feel like I've lost my image. Like everyone, I am the way I am. I'm not doing this because I'm pretending this is my way. And if I figure that if a girl is attracted to me, she's attracted to me because of what I am.
Right.
And I think that maybe it's a little weird thinking, but if we're in bed and she does the same thing to me as I do to her, I'm no different than her. And that's what the groups are today, the young ones. There is no one. They do this and that. But this is great. They probably were years ago, but never admitted. I don't know. But
some probably were.
Yeah. But I haven't changed. I have never changed. And I can say, and I'll swear on this tape or on any Bible you want, no girl has ever touched me. I mean, the whole shot.
No girl has ever made love to you in the same way that you've made love to her.
Correct.
Uh-huh. Well, it doesn't have to be.
But I don't, you know, they say, well, what do you get out of this? I said, it doesn't have to, don't worry about me.
Well,
because I'm happy when they are. That is my specific role, and I do my best.
Then let's talk about sex and how that works for you. When you're making love to your lover, are you orgasmic? Do you have orgasms when you make love to her?
Not really, no. I'm satisfied. I'm happy. If she climaxes, that's it for me.
Does something happen to you physically when she climaxes?
Mentally.
Mentally, yeah.
It's my sex. I don't. There's nothing more I want. I'm very happy.
Uh-huh.
And it's like a when I'm in between affairs or whatever. Oh, like some girls say, "Geez, I haven't had it in so long. I got to say." I don't have that. I don't need it. I don't. But if I meet someone I like, naturally I want to make love. I'm happy when I am. So sex is very important.
Right.
I really try to be a professional, say it really.
Well, it's an art.
Mm-hmm. Of course it is.
Definitely an art. And a science. I know women who are spontaneously orgasmic.
Mm-hmm.
When their lover comes, they are so tuned in mentally that they also experience the same orgasm.
I experienced something like that. Was that, I don't know, it's really not a big physical thing. I'm not lacking anything anymore. I don't want anything more.
Right.
I can't say that I've never satisfied. Maybe not quite to what they wanted, but some of their way out, you know. I see that they haven't really blossomed there, you know, then I feel pretty bad about that. I mean, it's almost like arouse me and then leave me.
Uh-huh.
If I can't, Jesus, that's a horrible thing.
Frustrating.
Oh, God, money.
Do you feel that frustration both mentally and physically?
Mm-hmm.
So I bet something does happen to you physically.
It does.
Also.
It's like I feel a great excitement and a great joy.
Uh-huh.
But not like they say they get. I don't
know. Well, people talk about sex in different ways, and sometimes it's hard to compare, you know, sex for you and sex for me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, are we using the same words to describe the same things? And, you know, it's hard to figure out if you're talking about the same thing. But I've had lovers who make love to me, and when I climax, their body actually goes into physical spasm. And they climax along with me. And I have touched them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that's wonderful. I'm jealous as all hell. I want to learn how to do that. Only that I can't do it. Because butches do that, and I'm not a butch.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how to explain. I do, when they go out, you know, like when it's there, you know. I am just so enthralled.
And you feel released.
Oh, God. You know, like,
huh.
I... I did this. I did this.
Yeah. It's a wonderful feeling. Well, we can change the subject.
No, that's right. I just wanted to throw that in.
No, it is important because when we first started interviewing, we didn't ask enough questions about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And sex is one of the important things. I mean, it is one of the differences between us and straight people is the way we make love.
Mm-hmm.
And although there are similarities.
There is. There's
lots of similarities.
Right.
There are also... There are also big differences in our sexuality and the way we think about our sexuality in a world that says that it's evil and sick is a real important part of how we see ourselves and each other. So it is interesting to know. Do you feel that your sexuality has changed over time? Are you any different from the way you were when you first came out? Certainly you've learned more.
Oh, yeah. Am I any different?
Or are you essentially the same?
Basically the same, with lots of experience.
Uh-huh.
I'm exaggerating.
Nothing better. Right, you can't go to school for that.
That's right.
What about the people around you? What about your friends? When you first started to go into bar life in like 1958, what were the other butches that you knew like then? Were they like you?
Oh, yeah. The ones that were butch were butch. Now, there might have been the butches that... still the sissies, you know, they come and order a drink and hide in the bathroom all night, you know, stuff like that.
What does that mean?
Well, I'm afraid someone will see them.
Oh, I see.
And they couldn't have short hair because they couldn't wear clothes. And that, I mean, if they didn't want to, I mean, that's a different story, but most of them wanted to, but they were afraid to the candy asses, you know. And of course, the butches that were butches like myself and the rest of us that were. We ruled them because we didn't give a shit. And those candy asses, why I put the girlies, shut up, you know. They had no say so.
Who were the people that you hugged out with at that time? Maybe we like first names. Pat was around.
Naturally, Pat, Black Jan, Elaine.
This is 58. Was Buff?
Buff was there. Yeah, but I didn't hang with her. She's back, right?
Right. Yeah, I've seen her.
You got running through the hospital. That hospital had 20 people.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, Buff was around, but I didn't, I know.
I'm going to hang out in that hospital bar. All the women there are dykes. Great.
Oh. Well, I didn't hang with Buff, though. She wasn't,
She was part of a different crowd? Was she a loner?
No, she just didn't think alike. Yeah, she was all right. So. We weren't the same. We just weren't the same. I couldn't run with her. You know, never.
All right,
my
so
ideas and hers
that,
were different.
That gives me some idea of the types of people that were there. Because I know Buff fairly well, and
mm-hmm.
I know you and Pat. And I guess Pat was one of the first people I knew out in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, little Bobby was the one who introduced me to everybody.
Yeah.
And Pat was one of the first people I met. And although I hardly really knew you at all,
mm-hmm.
I had met you a long time ago. And I knew Elaine. What was it that made you hang out together? What was it about you that was similar? That was, let's say, different from somebody like Bob? That made you more able to be together, to be part of the crowd?
We called a spade a spade. And there was no pretending. We were what we were, we fought for what we wanted. Or half of them wouldn't.
I see.
Mm-hmm. take any shit from men or women. And of course, we were always on the defensive because of bad tiny hand.
Right.
And
those are rough bars. The Mardi Gras, Chesterfield was going then.
Bingles, that was a real... I worked there. I think I was the last one working there when he closed.
Uh-huh.
I closed a lot of bars. I don't not very good.
Something about you,
I don't know. I just catch them at the tail end, you know. But we had an open house that night. We did anyhow. We used to steal all his food. He had a big refrigerator, freezer, whatever the hell it was in the back. Kept his beer back there. Jesus, we just walk on the back door.
Yes, I've been told that story already from one of the people you mentioned
Christ.
In your group, who tells stories about the waiting line at the bathroom.
Yeah.
And drinking warm beer.
And then when he was going to close, you know, that night, I said, this is it. So everybody mobs in it. I gave the bar away. I didn't take a dime. And I says, what the hell? I says, we got to have this jukebox. We got to have money. Break it open. Go to the court of this place. You give a shit. Play it all night. Then Chesterfield wasn't going then. Bingles was, Bingles and the Mardi Gras were about the same time.
Uh-huh.
They were about the same time. And then
Chesterfield later?
Yeah. Then Bingles closed. And then it was, because we used to run back and forth, it was just a block apart. And then we all went into the Mardi Gras. And then the Mardi Gras, then the Chesterfield opened, because that was right next door. And we'd go back and forth there. Well, then, at that period, we were all going through a, it was more or less, I don't know, contest we'd have with each other. We didn't call it that, but, what was the first one? I think the first one was showgirls, that was it. One of us at one time or another happened to go into the palace and happened to make out with a stripper. Say, well, you can get a stripper, I want to get a stripper. And it was always, that Pat and I especially, we always had something going. If she got, I had to get, you know. If I got, she had to get. So then we started, then everyone looked up. All the other butches, we come in with these dolls, all really swinging and saying something. They're buying us clothes and, you know, Christ. So that was our next, we stayed in that era for a while. Then from there we started going into Dugan's, because Dugan's was right behind the Mardi Gras. I mean, right behind the palace.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And the show we were. Just to come in there and we'd grab them when they come in there and just make out like crazy. And
now were they gay?
Bi. Bisexual. That didn't matter, we didn't care.
They were hustling, a lot of them.
Yeah. And had a lot of fun with them. Then after that, it was the hustlers, the hookers.
Yeah.
We could get the one with who could make the most money. And that was about the time Randy came out. She was, that was hysterical. I could sit here all night and talk about Randy. We lived in the same apartment building called the Homo Haven. It was on Cottage Street. 142 Cottage.
Okay, I know where Cottage is.
Yeah.
I don't know, it curves around.
It was right, little kitty corner from Day's Park.
Okay.
And, so Randy had an apartment. We all, there was, the whole apartment was gay girls.
Uh-huh.
It was all gay. And,
so what year is this?
Mm. Somewhere in the 60s.
Uh-huh.
Middle, I'd say maybe.
That late, huh?
I'd say about then, yeah.
Because yeah. I remember where I met Randy. She was tending bar at the
Chesterfield
when I first met her.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably early 60s, maybe 62.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was, she was wearing a skirt.
Yeah.
Behind the bar.
That's
this is
right.
Before slacks weren't accepted yet. Even
that
though,
late?
Oh, yes. And, like, you know, it pisses you off because, like today, everything is so open and accepted and equal. Women, all, everyone goes to where they wear slacks.
Yeah.
And I just, to kick myself in the ass because all the opportunities I had, that I had to let go because of my way that if I was able to dress the way I want and everything like that, Christ. It's just sick. And you look at the young people today, they're gay and they're financially well off. They got tremendous jobs. It's something that was, you couldn't take advantage of. You couldn't handle it. And it leaves you with a lot of bitterness too, you know, like, I don't go around to the gay bars much anymore. In fact, I don't. I see, it's not jealousy, it's bitterness. And I see these young people, it doesn't matter which way they go, whatever the mood suits them. Got tremendous jobs. And you just look at them, you know, and they're happy. And there's no problem. I say, God damn it, why couldn't I have that job? And you actually get bitter, you don't even want to know them. I don't want to. I don't want to hear about it. Don't tell me about your success. I don't want to hear it. Like you're talking about archives in my mind. Scratch on a shithouse wall. That's where we're. And all the dives in Buffalo that are still standing is my name. And that's it. That's all I got to show.
What are you going to have there?
Maybe.
This is being part of something very important.
I hope so. I'd like to be a part of it. Because I am a part of it.
Yes, you are. You're very crucial to it. One of the things that we were told that you were crucial to was that you were one of the women that kind of bridged both the black and the white communities.
Yeah.
And that you had some black girlfriends probably before and a number of other people did.
Mm-hmm.
When was that and how did that happen?
I think that all started where we actually, I would have to say, after hours twice, speakeasies. And, because there were speakeasies many years before that.
Yeah.
But not gay ones. Like, Christ, we wouldn't dare walk into, like, just a regular speakeasy, you know. We couldn't even go into a regular bar and just to speak, you know, our ass kicked. And you know how, I don't care what they say, colored people are cool. They are the coolest. I mean, they live and let live, they, believe me. And they don't care if you're white or what you are. If you're femme or straight, or they don't care. Do your thing. And so they had, that's where we went to the colored speakeasy. Because they didn't give a shit if you were gay. And they didn't bother you. And we go to the, and then naturally there was colored women, and there was running to gay people that were black. And then we got in pretty tight with them, you know, because we're going there all the time. And the house parties after that, naturally the girls, we made out. And where did we ever get the looks? Our own people. Black chick, you know, what the hell? I always knew.
When was the first time you got involved with a black woman? Or slept with a black woman?
That's when I was running with Jerry Jones.
Oh.
Yeah, that was my first black time. Yeah, we had Club Coco for a night.
And what year of the year?
That was, that was in the, I'd say, down about middle 60s. I can't get the year.
No. Okay, so this is the Club Coco. Mm-hmm. Was that when it was a key club?
Mm-hmm. And Jerry and I had that. I don't know who went to jail for it.
Oh, you and Jerry ran it together?
Yeah.
You didn't own it?
No, the guys that owned it were the Weinstein brothers.
Right, I knew the one of them, the Weinstein brothers.
Yeah, Irvin one. I can't think of that one. And they had lost their license.
Uh-huh. This is the same Irv Weinstein we all know and love. Is this the same Irv Weinstein from the television program?
No.
Was it a Weinstein or was it involved with the Tempestino? Or the,
that wasn't Tempestino, you're talking about somebody else. No, the fact is Irv Weinstein, because when we got busted there, and he was a newscaster then, Irv Weinstein.
Yeah.
And he said, well, you know, I'm just reading the names. He just, oh, that was a big thing that were in the headlines for 2 days on that.
Uh-huh.
And they arrested people, you know, it was Irv Weinstein. He said right away, he chuckled, and he says, by the way, no relation.
Uh-huh.
Because it's the same name. He said, no relation. But he was a newscaster then.
Yeah. So how did you get involved with Jerry?
Well,